Just for the record, it's May 15th. And we have members of the Fish Committee, myself, Bob Kehoe. I see Don McIsaac and Dave Graybill. Chair Carpenter let me know earlier this morning that he was not able to attend the meeting with a family emergency. And so he asked that I chair the meeting. The other important bit of business related to that is that two of the agenda items of particular importance, including the one that we will discuss, two of those items, the North of Falcon recap, and then also the Puget Sound Chinook Management Plan. In deference to the chair, Chair Carpenter, who has a long history with North of Falcon and Chinook Management, there was the decision to postpone those parts of the meeting. And I understand, Nikki, that there will be an effort to reschedule next week. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So for those folks that called in wanting to listen to the North of Falcon and Chinook Management Plan, apologize for the late switch, but it was due to a family emergency, and would ask for your consideration and look for a subsequent announcement where we can reschedule that. So, so let me just go through. I see we have Commissioner Anderson. Any other commissioners that are on the line? If so, please identify yourself. Okay, seeing none, and I can just...
And we've got Don McIsaac. Did you already say Don,
yeah,
Bob?
I already mentioned Commissioner McIsaac, who's a member of the Fish Committee. So why don't we go to staff on the line? Why don't you introduce yourselves, just for the record?
Yep, Steve Caramile, Inland Fish Program Manager.
Hey, thank you, Steve.
Commissioners, Kelly Cunningham, Fish Program Director.
Hey, good afternoon, Kelly. Thank you.
Kurt
Hughes. Kyle, go ahead. I'm seeing Kurt. Go ahead.
Kurt Hughes, Fish Management Division Manager.
Okay. Anybody else?
Legislative Director.
Thank you, Tom.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Craig Burley, Deputy Director of Fish Program.
Okay, Craig. And I see Ron and Ron Warren and the Director is also with us. And Joe Pinesco, thank you, Joe, for attending. So,
can I insert one comment, Commissioner Kehoe?
Yeah, sure.
Your introductory comment started off with it is May 15th, and for the record, today is the 14th.
Oh, sorry. One small error, May 14th. Yes, thank you. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm looking forward to the meeting tomorrow, May 15th. So, you know, we have an abbreviated agenda, as I mentioned. You know, we have time. I think my plan is if we do have members of the public that want to weigh in, you're free to do so. But I think what we'll do is we'll have the staff walk us through the agenda item, which is non-native game fish and fisheries policy. You know, we'll start out, Fish Committee members, if they have questions, you get first dibs, then other members of the commission, if you have questions, then it's your turn, and then we'll open it up to the public. So, why don't I, Craig, I think you're taking the lead on this. Is that correct?
Yes, Commissioner Kehoe, thank you.
Okay, why don't we start?
Great. So I'll attempt to share my screen at the right point here. But to let you know, Nikki did send the meeting materials to all of the commissioners earlier today, which included the blue sheet that the commission passed back in December of 19, and then also a draft proposed schedule for the development of the policy. And so I'll just share the draft or the blue sheet here on your screen. Let's see if that works.
Works.
Okay, so is that on your screen then?
Yes.
Okay. So far, so good. So the this is the blue sheet that the commission adopted at the December meeting. This was proposed by Commissioner Thorburn, and this was at the same meeting that the commission adopted rules that implemented the second substitute House Bill 1579 that the legislature passed to in part implement Southern resident killer whale recovery activities. And so the regulations that were adopted by the commission liberalized fishing regulations on walleye, bass, and channel catfish. And so at that same meeting, then Commissioner Thorburn presented this blue sheet. The commission adopted that, and the blue sheet directs staff to develop a non-native game fish and fisheries policy that will help guide the department in its management of these species moving into the future. And so I was going to try to share the other document.
Question on this one?
Yes.
This is a question for Tom McBride, maybe. The commission took some action, as you pointed out, Craig, it's in relation to a law. There's been a legislative session since we took that action. And Tom, I wondered if you heard anything negative about what the commission did, or if that decision seemed to be acceptable?
So two legislators were supporting a couple of Spokane anglers who wanted to create in statute a permanent warm water fishery advisory committee. We actually opposed that, not that we didn't want to have an advisory committee, but something like 50 advisory committees with the agency, and we just asked for the legislature to allow it to be an ad hoc where it could be convened, brought together for this purpose, and then go away so it doesn't sit around forever. So the bill they pursued to create a permanent advisory committee did not pass, but there is an expectation that there will be an ad hoc committee created to look at this issue. So does that answer the question, Commissioner?
Well, were there people who were on the killer whale protection maximum side of the equation who thought the commission action did not go far enough? Did you hear anything like that?
You know, I didn't hear that. I heard the proponents of the don't do anything advocating that there wasn't any support in the legislature for liberalizing the limits. I think kind of the silent majority was just like, it's not a battle we need. I think that the bill didn't pass was a good sign that probably you threaded the needle correctly with what you did. I didn't hear any negatives at the end of the session. After you guys make a decision on some of this stuff, I'll do an update to Senator Patton on the Senate side and Representative McCaslin, both out of Spokane, and I'll just give them an update to make sure they know we are following through with an ad hoc committee. And so I think it's pretty peaceful right now, except for maybe one or two people out of 147.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
So I'm gonna attempt to share a second sheet that's on your screen.
Yes.
Great, thank you. So what I wanted to do today was just do a quick walkthrough of a draft schedule to develop this policy. And this schedule has built in the ability to conduct a full SEPA if that is required. And so you'll see that in this document. However, we will be determining whether a full SEPA is required in the month of June. So our intent here, just walking through this document, is to have an internal kickoff starting in June. And here we're going to complete the SEPA checklist and determine whether or not SEPA is in fact required, whether there's a determination of significance or not. If there is that determination of significance, then we would move forward with the full SEPA process, going through developing a scoping document to identify the elements of the policy, et cetera. If there is a determination of non-significance, we would move forward on this similar time frame and developing the policy through the commission process. So as Tom mentioned earlier, during the last legislative session, Tom and I were before legislative committees. We did commit to the committees that we would develop an ad hoc advisory group to address these issues. And so you'll see here in the schedule that we will be soliciting members for this ad hoc advisory group starting in around late July. Those advisory groups would then be appointed by the director to serve on this advisory group. And the intent here is to seek nominations for individuals on this committee that would develop, would represent a broad range of perspectives that we would anticipate seeing as we talk about these type of policy elements. So we would get that group in place, and then around the early September period, we would bring back to the FISH committee the outcome of either the scoping process or our initial, if SEPA wasn't required, our initial thinking around what the elements of a policy would look like, and then second, a range of options from a sort of status quo to maybe a liberal and a conservative type option. And the idea here is to make sure that the interests of our advisors are represented in the range of options across this sort of framework for a policy development. We then bring the advisory group together to kick off this effort with our advisors. We present them what that framework looks like in terms of the elements that we would consider, as well as the options that would be included around those elements. Then we would get that input from the advisors. We'd work to fine-tune that that work, and then we'd bring that back in late October, which would be basically a framework that we would use then to move forward with developing an initial draft of the EIS if necessary and the policy. And that we're thinking would take a period of time to get in place, so that by early January we would come back to the FISH committee and brief the committee on sort of an initial draft of what the policy and or SEPA would look like. And then at that point would be ready to go out for a public comment in January. The comment period would likely be about around a month, and so it would end in the February timeframe. Staff would summarize the comment that we received, and then we would bring what we heard back to the advisory group, have that discussion, incorporate the public comments, and would be ready then to brief the commission in early May regarding a draft policy based on our advisory group work as well as public comment. Then in June, we would be working on revising that policy based on the comment we received in May. We would get back together with the advisory group to go through the revisions that were made, and then in July come back to the commission for a briefing and formal public hearing. And then after that, we would work to incorporate final set of comments from the hearing and would be finalizing a policy that we would then bring back to the commission in the September time period for a decision. And then we would follow up with a meeting in late September to close out the advisory group. So this is the draft schedule. And the idea here is we built in the ability to conduct the full environmental impact statement if necessary through the State Environmental Policy Act or through the commission process, absent that if there's a determination of non-significant that's made early on. So I'd stop there and entertain questions from the committee or commissioners.
Okay, thank you, Craig. Fish committee members, any further questions? Go ahead.
This is Red Dawn. I'll follow.
No, go ahead, Dave. Let me just ask this question, and then I defer to you first. But I wonder how to get off of this screen, the share screen thing for myself. This is a question for Tess or Nikki. I had written some comments on the schedule and process here, but this thing's all over my whole screen, and I can't bring it up. How do I minimize that?
Do you have also in the top right hand corner an exit full screen text?
Let's see. Oh yeah, I do see that. There it is. Okay.
And that sometimes can allow for a little bit easier navigation to find those other windows.
Okay. Thank you. And Dave, go ahead. Let me get my notes up here.
All right. Thanks, Don. Initially when the legislature sort of directed had legislation directed to this issue, we had a list of about 140 some lakes that were to be included in this. That was refined down to a little over 100, I believe, and primarily the Columbia River and tributaries. And really what my question is as this ad hoc advisory committee is formed, will there be attention paid to geographics in terms of having representatives throughout the Columbia River Basin and then even with consideration of the tributaries that are impacted by this?
Thank you, Commissioner Graybill. So the intent would be to solicit nominees through a news release so that we could get the broadest perspective possible. To make a workable committee, we'd probably look for around the 12 members, roughly. I can anticipate there's going to be interest from conservation groups as well as our avid warm water anglers. And so we'll want to strive to get the broadest representation that we can, not only subject wise but also geographically. So I think the short answer to your question is yes, we'll want broad geographic representation, but we'll also want the broadest perspectives represented as possible as well.
That's great, Craig. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Mikozik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first, let me say thanks to the staff for putting together this detailed process and schedule. This is exactly the kind of thing that makes for an efficient meeting on trying to plan all this out. I've got a couple of comments as we move through this thing, but let me start with the very beginning. When this kicks off, there's not a commission meeting. This kind of at the Fish Committee seems to be the kickoff. When you start drafting a scoping document and you have some sort of, well, what's the purpose of all this anyway? I would presume that you'd be looking at the previous commission guidance and direction. And the blue sheet has a lot of that in there, as Kim did a nice job, or Commissioner Thorburn did a nice job at writing that up. But just to restate what may be the obvious, that it would be good that you presume that the purpose of all this is the previous commission guidance and direction, which was kind of in the spectrum of considering all these warm water fish, vermin that need to be eradicated, or valuable fish that should be protected, and just forget about the fact that they are predators on juvenile salmon, that the commission did not land on either of those extremes. And this whole policy is to try to target that. And when you put scoping comments out and direct attention to all this, that I'm just going to presume that's your orientation. Like I said, maybe that's just stating the obvious. The other thing that strikes me in this whole schedule, two things maybe, is there's a lot of reliance on the Fish Committee as opposed to the full commission when it gets down to taking a look at policy language, authorizing policy language to go out for public review, and this and that. So I wondered, for example, in your row that says late October 2020, a second meeting on policy and maybe a SEPA framework, and reviewing the final framework with advisory group, and then beginning to draft the policy. If at that point there ought to be some sort of check-in with either the Fish Committee or the full commission on the policy language drafting. Now, maybe you think that's going to happen in early September up above, and if that's so, I think so, but at some point it would seem that as you start the policy drafting language, that the commission hear what the advisory body thinks is appropriate, hear from the staff some ideas, and either blesses those to go forward or adds a couple to them. Early January 2021, the Fish Committee briefing. And again, the commission has yet to be brought into this at this point in time, at least on your schedule. And so this is when there's some sort of authorization for a public review draft to go out. So January of 2021, in non-bold, submit the draft policy for public comment. And again, I kind of wonder whether or not the full commission ought to be involved in that. But maybe a different approach is to say, well, you have a Fish Committee meeting. The Fish Committee discusses this. The Fish Committee comes before the full commission and gives a Fish Committee report, at which time there would be discussion by the full commission. And if the Fish Committee said that everything so far has just been outstanding, and there's a draft policy language that's been on the website for a week, that's what the Fish Committee saw, and the Fish Committee, which cannot act on behalf of the full commission, but the Fish Committee is inclined to say this is the cat's meow at this stage to be sent out for public review, and the full commission says sounds good, it would seem to me that because the Fish Committee cannot act for the full commission, that maybe early January 21, there could either be a full commission agenda item, or everybody understands that in the Fish Committee report to the full commission, that there's that opportunity for the full commission to weigh in on it. We get down to May of 2021, and you see that briefing on a draft policy and public comments received at this point in time. We get to July of 2021, and we again hear comments from the public. Comments from the advisory body have happened in between there. I just wonder whether or not both of those are needed, or whether there could be some condensation of that. I'll just ask the staff maybe to think about that as I go through the rest of this. And the last comment I have is, it seems to me that there's this public hearing process in July, followed by a commission decision in September with no public comment. And, I wonder whether or not we could go to a final decision in July and take public comment at the same time as the public hearing. And if the commission wants to make a few changes by that point, this thing should probably be pretty well vetted with the commission, but you can just make those comments in a final adoption motion. So those are some comments of mine as we went through it. But again, thank you for putting this all together, and just want to throw those out for discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Craig, do you have any thoughts or response?
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac and Commissioner Kehoe. So the maybe moving up from the September date, the intent here was a separation between the public hearing and the decision between July and September was to allow staff to fully address any public comment that was received in July, and to be able to bring some thoughtful responses and to address those comments to the commission in September, so the commission could deliberate and make a decision. It can be challenging if there is comment received at the same meeting where a decision is made, and then staff are challenged with fully addressing those public comments sort of on the spot. And so the intent here was a bit of a separation between the public comment and the commission decision, so that staff could fully provide thoughtful responses to the commission. So that was the thinking behind that. Similarly, with a May public comment and a July public comment, was the ability to, in May, provide the initial thinking, any changes that staff made based on commission input or public was developed and then presented in July, and the public would have an intent to comment again. Trying to address concerns we've heard in the past that public provides comment, we make changes, and then they're not able to provide comment on those final changes. So that was the initial thinking anyway, by staff. I think the other comment in January of 21, if the commission would rather, Commissioner McIsaac, you sort of presented two options there, either a committee report to the full commission or a full commission briefing by staff. Staff would be amenable to either at the commission's pleasure.
Okay.
You okay with that, Commissioner McIsaac?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as the end of the schedule, I think that's fine. If we're going to report on this tomorrow morning, I think that staying the course of what's described there toward the end is probably a good idea. If it turns out there really aren't very many comments that come forward in July of 2021, the commission could react then. Maybe a question for our legal counsel on this business of early January 2021. So staff has said it could go either way. With regard to interfacing with the public, is there one of these that you think is a better way to go with regard to anybody maybe challenging the system, or any perspective from yours there on what's the optimal public policy on that?
No, I don't. I don't quite understand the question. I don't have that the time frame back in front of me, but I have the attachment here, so I can open it again. I mean, from the SEPA perspective, it depends upon what the SEPA decision is initially in terms of potential pathways for challenge. If the agency arrives at a determination of non-significance or a mitigated determination of non-significance, and then adopts the policy, I guess let me back up. The legal portal for a challenge will tie to the commission's action of adopting the policy, and any SEPA work would be completed at that time, whether it's an EIS or a much less DNS or MDNS. If the SEPA analysis says, yeah, this the adoption of this policy is likely to have significant adverse environmental impacts, then your timeline is going to be much longer because it takes time to pull together a thorough, comprehensive, and legally defensible EIS. So that would push out the actual policy decision deadline to the point where all the EIS analysis is done. Either way, once the decision is made with the associated SEPA documents, if there's a SEPA challenge, it would come in at the same time as there any other type of challenge to the policy adoption. Any other challenge would be under the Administrative Procedure Act, arguing that the policy is arbitrary and capricious or outside the legal authority of the commission would be the APA kind of challenges that people would bring to it. So all that said, in terms of timing, I don't have a legal input on the timing of any of that. It really has to do with staff time to do all the work necessary to defend the decisions all the way along.
Well, Joe, let me maybe ask it this way. The angle I was trying to get at mostly was the delegation to the Fish Committee to do so much decision making on behalf of the full commission. So this is a Fish Committee meeting. It's starting off there. The next time this comes before anybody as a commissioner, it's a Fish Committee briefing. The next time it comes together in early January, it's a Fish Committee briefing. The commission doesn't get involved until way down the road when there's been a lot of decision-making, call it mini decision-making if you want, but there's been some decision-making done. Is it okay with you if the Fish Committee in their committee reports to the full commission says we've asked staff to go down this road and take about a 5-degree turn here or turn right there or turn left here and rely on that discussion in front of the full commission as a committee report of being sufficient with regard to anybody who says, well, the committees aren't supposed to be acting on behalf of the full commission? On the other hand, do you need to have a full commission agenda item somewhere between ground zero and May of 2021 is the first thing on this sheet where the full commission is actually listed.
Right. And this runs into a typical chicken or the egg type quandary. And under this proposal, I'm not concerned about it, because if you say that, well, the commission needs to see what the department is going to provide to the commission for final approval up front, then that means the commission needs to decide what it wants up front. But as opposed to varying levels and degrees of input, whether from the Fish Committee or whether from individual commissioners or just from department staff and the director saying, oh, let's take this approach. Ultimately, it lands on the full commission's agenda for final approval. And so the blue sheet process is an option for one or more commissioners to request department staff to look at something and ultimately put it in front of the commission. And the commission makes a decision once it's ultimately in front of it. Legally, the commission does not have to dictate up front what gets placed in front of it for approval, right? There's a lot of latitude there, and I, that's sort of where I see this is the ultimate decision on what the commission wants to do in terms of setting policy will be in front of the commission whenever it gets in front of the commission. And I don't think the commission itself legally needs to set the sideboards for what gets placed in front of the commission for consideration. Because if the commission ultimately doesn't like what's placed in front of it, it can vote no. And that could be a point for it to provide further direction about what other options it would want brought in front of it.
So let me just kind of weigh in here, if I may. You know, Commissioner McIsaac brings up very good points, I think. You know, I'm comfortable with this approach of relying on the Fish Committee. And part of my comfort is that knowing is that we have these meetings will be open to the public, open to other commissioners. We won't have that, four maximum commissioner problem. And I know we have a lot of interest by some of the other commissioners. So I think, you know, we can certainly provide updates through the Fish Committee reports as we go along, and certainly our non-Fish Committee members will have an opportunity to weigh in as we go. So I think it's I'm comfortable with it. And
Mr. Kehoe?
Yes.
A non-committee member who would like to weigh in on a few things.
I was going to introduce you. I'm glad you came in, and I wanted to thank you, Commissioner Thorburn, for bringing this blue sheet forward. It's I know it was responsive to some concerns of the public, but I'm glad you're here and the floor is yours.
Thank you. A few things, a couple of comments, and then a question on process. And I've got my video off because I'm having a little internet trouble. Talking about this process and the issues that Commissioner McIsaac raised, we do SEPA on many of the policies that come before us, and very often they come to us at the end of the entire process. I mean, staff generally is the one that's running the process. On some of these higher profile policy issues, and certainly with wolves, we're finding ourselves a bit more involved in the process as we go along. And I think I agree with Commissioner McIsaac and really like the timeline because it does engage the commission or a subcommittee of the commission perhaps a little bit more than it does happens with less high profile, lower profile policy issues that go through SEPA and come to us. The second thing I wanted to bring up, I just thank again the Commissioner McIsaac for kind of framing it and for Craig's response in terms of the committee structure. This really came to my attention because it is one of those kind of polar issues where we have real opposite sides of the spectrum. And I'm hoping with the policy that we really can bring the issues together and serve the interests on all sides well with a policy. And so I was really pleased with Craig's description of what they'll look for on the committee. I think it's very important to get that kind of representation, geographic as well as issue. Thanks, Craig, for thinking that through. And then my question is kind of just out of process curiosity, who are the other agencies that will be brought into this in terms of the EIS and DNS decision and how that will fall? If we could talk a little bit more about perhaps, Craig, how you think that will go forward, if I'm clear with that question.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Thorburn, I'm not exactly sure of the question.
Well, when you're making the determinations, whether it's full EIS or DNS, that you go out to other agencies, right? To seek input before the, what's the process that gets us to the point of DNS versus full environmental impact study?
So I can start, and then I'll also look to Mr. Panesco if I go astray here. But my understanding is the agency will do a CEPA checklist and will do an assessment of the action, complete that checklist, and then there's an internal review, and it's an agency determination of whether or not there's a DNS or not. That's my understanding, but I defer to Mr. Panesco here at this point.
Sure, I'll jump, and that is accurate. I mean, in some contexts where an entity is taking an action that requires approval by another agency, like a permit, then the permitting agency would also be directly involved in the CEPA determination. This here we are talking about a purely internal decision to adopt a policy that guides internal action. So there's no legally inherent step of any other agency necessarily being involved. Although there is, when an agency is taking an action and does a CEPA determination, depending upon the level of that determination, there will be levels of public notice and comment. And during that process, other agencies may well be invited to weigh in on the CEPA checklist and determination. And likewise, if it were to go to an EIS, there'd be further opportunity for other agencies to weigh in. Part of the challenge is sort of a chicken or the egg circumstance with, you know, what is the policy going to call for? Right? Because if the policy is very high level stuff that doesn't have a lot of concrete actions, focuses more on setting of fishing seasons and limits, well, the action of setting fishing seasons and limits is CEPA exempt because it happens so often. But if it gets into much broader policy level management decisions like supplementation, habitat issues, maybe it doesn't fit in that exemption and it triggers CEPA. But without, you know, you sort of have to know what the policy is going to be contemplating to really accurately fill out the CEPA checklist to know, are there likely to be significant adverse environmental impacts by what the policy calls for? If the policy calls for using dynamite to blow these non-native game fish species out of the waters, that might have significant likely adverse environmental impacts, but I doubt that's on the radar screen. So if it's more bland than that, then it might just be a DNS. But there is sort of a struggle there, is, you know, what exactly is the call for the policy to do to sort of help the environmental analysis about, okay, well, will these actions likely have a significant adverse environmental impact to require a deeper environmental look or not?
Okay. Commissioner Thorburn, does that answer your question?
It does. I guess I could see a policy that might be of interest to other agencies, a couple of federal agencies, Bureau of Reclamation, perhaps U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and certainly tribal governments. So that's where my agency thinking was. Thank you. That was very helpful.
If I could just touch on one more thing with that. I mean, it's one thing in terms of legal obligations to reach out to others to comply with the minimal CEPA steps and procedures. It's entirely a policy side for the agency to think about its constituencies, its co-managers, and wanting to reach out to them when it's considering something that may implicate their interests and issues. So that's not the legal arena at all. That's much more on the policy arena.
Okay, thanks. Commissioner Anderson, do you have any questions, or any other commissioners?
No, I don't.
Okay. Anybody else? Well, I just want to, you know, maybe this is kind of a simple question, but I envision this policy, whatever the commission comes up with, it will be a tool that the agency can use, you know, when it goes about setting bag limits and, you know, whether to have a, you know, conservative bag limit or to, you know, say, no, catch as many as you want. Is that correct? I mean, that's kind of what you would use the policy for ultimately. Great. Is that right, Craig?
Thank you, Commissioner. I wasn't sure if you were.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, you know, I was just trying to think of, you know, ultimately we put a lot of work into this policy, right? As you know, about a year and a half work of staff work, public involvement. And so the end product would be for use to do what exactly? I mean, you know, would this right. guide then the agency in setting seasons and different species in different areas? Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what you would be using it for ultimately?
Thanks, Commissioner Kehoe. So yeah, I think definitely in my mind that is an element of what the policy would be. I would see the policy could provide the agency with guidance on when and where we would manage for non-native game fish species. We've talked about warm water species, but we also have non-native cold water game fish species. And so it may contemplate the management priorities of non-native game fish as opposed to native species. That may fall outside of strictly fishing regulations. There might be management intent that we could gather from a policy as well. So there's, in my mind, there could be broader elements. There could be hatchery production elements contemplated in the policy. Off the top of my head, those are some initial things that we've been thinking about.
And that's, you know, and we'll be looking to the public and this advisory committee to hear what their concerns are and what they would like to see in a policy. So, okay, good stuff. Does the director or Ron Warren, do you want to anything to add?
No, I think that covers it well. I will confirm that use of dynamite is beyond the scope of the EIC, but other than that, I think it's pretty clear.
That's good to hear. So very good. Okay, well, I think that's it unless, well, let me ask Tess, do we have members of the public that are on that would like to say a few words? We don't have the 3-minute gong, but that would be kind of the operating guidelines. Does anybody?
Sure. So if you're, it looks like we have a couple people dialed in by phone. So if you do want to raise your hand, that's going to be *9 on your phone. If folks who are joining via their computers want to raise their hand, you're going to just look for that little hand icon down at the bottom that you see as an attendee in that black dash bar. So if folks, I know this agenda looked a little bit different than maybe some folks were anticipating, but if you've got something to say, go ahead and put your hand up and I can make sure to get you unmuted. And I'm not seeing anyone yet. But we will give folks just another pregnant pause here to find that raise hand button or to dial in *9 on their phone. All right. I'm not seeing anything, Bob.
Okay, well, I think it. I will take that as everybody is extremely pleased with the work of the commission, and we're on the right track, and that people will be staying tuned to follow this policy as it develops. And again, I want to thank Commissioner Thorburn for bringing this forward. And, so if that's all we have, then I guess we're ready to adjourn. And we will look out, I guess Nikki will, we'll try to post something as soon as we know when we're gonna reschedule the other agenda items north of Falcon and the Chinook management plan.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Well, thank you all. And see you all tomorrow.
Thank you.
Till tomorrow.
Thank you.